number Dream Babe, which seems to be doing very well for Roy Orbison in the American charts, with Paul McCartney on vocal lead, it's the Beatles.
Sweet dream, baby.
John Lennon takes the vocal lead in this rhythm and blues version of Memphis, Tennessee.
Long distance information, give me Memphis, Tennessee. Try to find the pardon, trying to get in touch with me. Would not leave a number, but I know who placed the call. Falco took the message and he wrote it on the wall. Help me, information, more than that I cannot have. Only that I miss her and all the fun we had. We were full of poppy cars, her mom would not agree. Help me get in touch with her in Memphis, Tennessee. The last time that I saw Marie, she was waving me goodbye. With hurry home, dropped on her, the whistle from her eyes. Marie is only 50 years old, information please. Help me get in touch with her in Memphis, Tennessee.
Beatles with John Lennon take the stage once more for their offering of the record, which is doing so much at present for the Marvelettes. Here now as they cry, please, Mr. Postman.
Wait, oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait, wait, hey, 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 Mr. Postman. Mr. Postman, look and see.
Oh yeah,
bring your back for me.
Far away.
By our guest for tonight, entitled Ask Me Why. Our guest being a group by the name of The Beatles.
I love you. Tell me things I want to know. And it's true that it really only goes to show that I know that I should never be blue.
Beatles who come on stage now with Paul McCartney taking the vocal lead in what must surely be a Spanish classic, Bésame Mucho.
Bésame mucho. Each time I give you a kiss, I hear music divine. Bésame mucho. If you should leave me, then each little dream would take wing, and my life would be through. I should have known. Bésame mucho.
Rising very nicely in the charts is Mr. Joe Brown, who is lucky enough to have A Picture of You, which is also the cue for the final offering from the Beatles today, and this time it's a feature for George Harrison.
In the night, so I fly to be seen. Songs like jewels on the ground of a queen. But the only night I want of you is that wonderful picture of you. On a street corner in a cafe, all of the evening and most of the day. My mind is in a maze, what can I do? I still see that picture of you. It was that summer I fell in love. My heart told me what to do. I saw you there on the crest of a hill, and I took a little picture of you. And you were gone like a dream in the night. With you, when my heart, my love, come alive. I didn't know your name, what could I do? I only had a picture of you. I didn't know your name, what could I do? I only
may bring their own exciting rhythm and blues type treatment to Beautiful Dreamer.
Time now to bring on stage one of the regular Here We Go groups. Four young men from Liverpool paying their fourth visit to the show. And this must surely be one of the most dynamic groups in the country today. So stand by now as we bring you the sound of the Beatles.
The world is treating me bad, misery.
Misery, one of the tracks there from the Beatles' new LP to be released shortly and entitled Please, Please Me. We'll ask the Beatles to stay on stage for another of their own compositions. Do you want to know a secret?
You'll never know how much I really love you. You'll never know how much I really care. Promise not to tell. Whoa, whoa, closer. Let me whisper in your ear. Say the words you long to hear. I'm in love with you. Ooh. Listen, do that. Do you want to know a secret?
Do that.
Do you promise not to tell?
Do that.
Whoa, whoa.
we're particularly pleased to have the Beatles with us tonight, as it's always nice to see any of the groups that made their first broadcast on Here We Go hitting the charts in a big, big way. And I think that these boys certainly deserve our warm congratulations, because this time they've returned to us with a number one hit. And that's what we like to see. But what we like to hear, of course, is Please, Please Me. Please, Please Me, written, recorded, and placed at number one by tonight's guests, the Beatles.
Oh, right. Well, now, you've probably read somewhere recently that John Lennon has been out of the act with a dodgy throat, right, John?
Dodgy, oh, very.
Well, he's back now, as you can hear, and you'll be working with the boys tonight, I guess.
Oh, definitely. I joined them last night, yeah.
Good for you. Now, apart from establishing a sort of fashion in hairstyles, clothes, music, and everything else, you write songs as well, don't you?
Is that what we do?
Well,
yeah, we do write songs.
And haven't you written the new one for Kenny Lynch?
Kenny Lynch, yes. I don't know when it's out, but
it's out now. Why didn't you keep it for yourself? It's a great number.
Well, you know, he's a friend of ours, Kenny. Oh. Well, he's only... we met him on the Helen Shapiro tour, isn't it?
But you do you sing this number yourself?
We've done it on our LP.
Out next week?
Yes.
All right, well, let's hear it right now. Misery.
The world is treating me bad. Misery. I'm the kind of guy who never used to cry.
my bride. I'm talking about you. You swallow up the fool.
I'm beginning to see why nobody can live on the same stage with this outfit. So if Disley, George Melly, or who is it, Rolf Harris, are listening this morning, they've got to introduce these boys at the Albert Hall on April the 18th. And good luck to you, mate. So now let's, from a tremendous stack of requests for Please Please Me this week, who's going to read them?
Oliver.
Right, come on then. Let's have this one.
Here we go. First one's for Bar, Jill, Jane, and all the Beatles fans.
All the Beatles fans!
From Zoo and Viv.
Zoo and Viv!
You mind? Here, we can't have that. Let's have another one.
Well, this is for Vivian Simmons and Form 4D of Bexley Grammar School. Yeah, that's it.
That's
Bexley
all.
Bexley Grammar School.
And
Kent.
You went to Hanley-Stoke-on-Trent recently, didn't you?
Yeah, that's
well, this
right,
this
yeah.
lot, we're in the audience.
Yeah, this is for Jean and Gwen, and it's for Bud and Stanley.
Now, so, please please me by belting up and singing Please Please Me.
Thank you. Well, actually, they did give me a go on the LP. And between you and me, I think that's the track that's selling it. And it's a number called Boys.
Well, I think we should hear it now, Ringo. Thank you very
much. So do I.
Pop Chats. Here's Phil Say talking to one of the top recording artists in our weekly feature, Pop Chats.
Well, our guests this week in Pop Chat are the Beatles, John, Paul, George and Ringo. Let's start off with you, Ringo. Everybody knows the Beatles as a Liverpool group, but were you all actually born in Liverpool?
Yes, every one of us.
Are you keeping your homes in Liverpool, or do you plan on moving to London or anything like that?
I don't think any of us are moving. We must have a base in London, you know, because we're there more than we're in Liverpool at the moment. But we're not moving our houses.
Sean, over to you for a minute. You do a lot of songwriting, I believe. Do you always work as a team?
Mainly. All the better songs that we have written, the ones that anybody wants to hear, both of us have written.
And do you write the words and music together, or does one of you write the words?
Sometimes half the words are written by me and he'll finish them off, or just we go along a word each, practically.
And did you write your new record release?
She Loves You, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, we wrote that 2 days before we recorded it, actually.
Actually, we wrote it in a hotel room in Newcastle.
Well, this brings me to a question from one of your fans, Vicky Owen of Chadwell Heath. How did this distinctive hairstyle come about?
Well, I don't think any of us have been bothered with having haircuts. And it was always long. Paul and John went to Paris and came back with it, something like this. And I went to the baths and came out with it like this.
Another fan, Sheila Holland of Ilford, was anxious to know how you managed to get any private life. I mean, if you take a girl out, how do you avoid being recognised? Paul?
I don't know, just sort of run.
Now, John, I know you'll have very little time for anything but music at the moment, but if you had spare time, what sort of hobbies and sports do you enjoy?
Well, none of us are very sporting, you know. The only sport we do bother with is swimming. Well, we don't count that as a sport, but hobbies are just writing songs.
Well, now we come to the request. Who's going to give me a request? How about you, Ringo?
I think we'd all like to hear Billy Jay's Bad to Me, please.
Okay, Bad to Me, it shall be. Thank you very much, the Beatles.
I'm Ringo and I play the drums.
Well, I'm Paul and I play the bass.
I'm George and I play a guitar.
I'm John and I too play a guitar. Sometimes I play the fool.
It wasn't so much that we foresaw, you know, a big success. We just never thought that there'd be anything particularly bad that happened to us. We never sat down at one particular point and all sort of worried about anything. We've always thought that something would turn up sometime.
Well, actually, yeah, we have been misquoted saying, you know, people saying we make 7,000 a week and all that. I mean, we probably do make quite a bit, but we don't actually see it because record royalties, things like that, take months before they come in. And anyway, the cost of fortune. But we've also got an accountant who sort of, and a company, Beatles Limited, who, they see the money. And the thing is, I mean, we are and we aren't doing it for the money, really, because, I mean, we, don't forget, we played for about 3 or 4 years or maybe longer, just earning hardly anything. Well, we wouldn't have done that. If we were doing it for the money, we wouldn't have been, you know, lasted out all those years. I mean, we like it sufficiently to do it not for the money too, but I mean, the money does help, let's face it. You know, we all love being on stage.
No, you've got
to
go into that practice.
Yeah. I'm not. Yeah, I haven't got the patience to practice to become a perfect guitarist. You know, I'm more interested in the combination of my voice and the guitar I know, and to write songs than I am in the instrument itself. I never go through a day hardly without playing it, whether I'm performing or not. You know,
George is the one of us who's interested in the instrument. I think yeah, you know, he's really about the most interested. But the other three of us, you know, are more interested in the sound of the group. You know,
and to be a guitarist, you're supposed to practice a couple of hours a day. Well, I mean, I don't do that.
There'll be anything you're supposed to practice a couple of hours a
day. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the thing is, we're not individually, we're all, you know, I suppose we're all crummy musicians, really.
Well, lads, almost unknown in January, and now going into the Royal Command performance in November. This is quite a rise, even for your business, isn't it, Paul?
Yes, but it's been very quick, and we have been very lucky. Yeah.
How much of this is due, do you think, to pure musical talent?
Don't know. No idea. You just can't tell, you know. I mean, maybe a lot of it, maybe none of it.
How much would you say?
I agree with Paul, you know.
How much of this is getting popularity by acting the fool a bit and playing around?
Well, I mean, that's just natural. We don't do it, you know, we do it anyway, whether we're on stage or
not. Your funny haircuts aren't natural.
Well, we don't think they're funny, you see, copper.
George, can I turn to you now? How long do you think you're going to be successful? You've had this monumental rise. Obviously, this sort of thing can't go on, but do you think you can settle down to a life in show business?
Well, we're hoping to. I mean, not necessarily a life in show business, but at least a couple more years.
A long run.
Yeah. I mean, if we do as well as Cliff and the Shadows have done up to now, well, I mean, we won't be moaning.
We're very happy.
I mean, naturally, it can't go on as it has been going the last few months. I mean, it'd just be ridiculous.
How do you find all this business of having screaming girls bobbing all over the place?
Well, we feel flattered. I mean, it's
and
very
flattened.
Yeah, and flattened. But, I mean, if the screaming fans weren't there, then we wouldn't be here, would we?
Paul, coming quickly back to you again, Mr. Edward Heath, the Lord Privy Seal, has said that the other night he found it difficult to distinguish what you were saying as Queen's English. Now, are you going to try and lose some of your Liverpool dialect for the Royal Show?
No, you're kidding.
Vote for him. No. No, we wouldn't bother doing that. You know, we don't all speak like them BBC posh fellas, you know.
No, we don't.
Well, with that, I better wish you good luck in the show. What song will you be singing most there, do you think?
Well, I don't know, but I should imagine we'd do She Loves You. Jolly good.
The reason for the extra bit at the end, ladies and gentlemen listening at home, is that we just called Paul over and they all shouted Paul. Paul, now, hush. Paul, we just heard the good news that you and the boys have been chosen to appear in this year's Royal Variety performance.
Oh, yeah.
Marvellous.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's terrific, and all the fellas and us
nice,
are knocked out.
Nice.
Great.
Lovely.
There we go, right.
Nice.
Well, let's have two more songs from you right now. Here we go, From Me to You.
Before the Beatles set out to conquer Paris and New York, I caught up with them on the road in Doncaster, in the industrial north of England. And while a crowd of 2,000 teenagers screamed ecstatically inside the theatre, I forced my way through the stage door and talked with the Beatles in their dressing room. And there they were, long hair, elastic-sided boots, the lot.
Ringo Starr, it's been suggested that boys coming from the particular area that you come from, if you hadn't found an interest in music, might have found it much more difficult to get out and make a go of life. Would you comment on this?
I think it's true, you know. I mean, when I was 16 and that, you know, I used to walk on the road, you know, with the rest of the lads, and we'd have all our drape coats on and just, you know, we've had a few knocks and that with other rival gangs sort of thing. But then I got the drums and the bloke next door played a guitar and I got a job.
Kenny boy!
And we started playing together, and another bloke in work made a bass out of an old tea chest, you know, in them days. This was about 58, mind you. And we played together, and then we started playing on dances and things, you know, and we took an interest in it. And we stopped going, you know, out of sort of hanging around corners every night.
Would you say that the enormous difference which your success in this field has had has greatly influenced you, Ringo, as far as your philosophy of life or what you want to get out of it?
Oh, yeah.
George Harrison, how different is your life now as a member of the Beatles to what it was, say, even 4 years ago?
Everything's completely changed. We don't have a private life anymore, and we are public property now. Not that we mind.
You don't mind being such a very public property with no private time at all?
Well, you get accustomed to it, and, you know, after a while, it's just, you just take it for granted, and you just do everything automatically, like signing autographs and waving at people.
What about home life with your own family? Do you ever get any these days?
Yeah, occasionally. Say once every fortnight we manage to get home. And if we're not appearing in our hometown, then it's usually okay. They don't expect us to be there. And it's, you know, quite quiet.
But does it change your status with the family much?
Not really. It makes them more popular, and people sort of, after a while, spot my parents anyway. You know, they're like, or the same with the others, you know, they'll say there's George's dad, or, whereas before they wouldn't know him from Adam. But, you know, they're just still the same as before.
What about the wealth that comes with this kind of success? Has that made a great deal of difference to the way you live and the way your family live?
No, it hasn't made, not so far, it hasn't made any difference, except for our holidays and things like that. You know, we can just get the money out of the bank and go wherever we want.
And you're one of the reputed deep thinkers of this group. How do you see it as a peak in your life? What happens to you after this is over?
Well, I suppose we'll stay doing this sort of stuff for a couple of years. Naturally, we won't be able to stay at this level, but we should have another 2 years at least, I think.
Then what happens? What happens to George Harrison then?
I don't know. I'll know by the time that comes along. Probably have a little business or something like that.
You don't want to go on in the profession?
Probably, I'd like to make records, you know, with other artists. I don't mean perform, I mean as a producer.
The technical thing.
But I don't know, you can't really tell at this stage.
Paul McCartney, you were one of the original Beatles. Where did the name Beatles originate?
Well, dibs. John thought of it first of all, just as a name, just for a group, you know. We just didn't have any name. Well, we did have a name, but we had about 10 of them a week, you know. We didn't like this idea, so we had to settle on one particular name. And John came up with the name Beatles one night. And he sort of explained how it was spelt with an EA, and we said, oh, yes, it's a joke.
Since when it's come to represent a large section of the young population in England called the Beatle people. Do people regard yourself as leaders of this particular group?
No, we're not leaders of any sort of a group. The thing is, people always say, you started great trends and things, but in actual fact, all that we've done is gone along with the trends. And if in going along with it, we sort of encouraged other people to go along with a couple of our ideas, you know, all very well, but we haven't tried consciously to start anything like a trend, you know.
Now, you were very much younger when this enormous success started, and you're riding the summit of it now. Do you see it as a peak, a mountain, interfering with the flow of your life?
I don't really know what you mean by very much younger. It was only a year ago.
But you've been working since 58, haven't you?
Well, yeah, not working, you know. I mean, strictly speaking, we've been out of work since 58, and we've been doing this as a hobby, because we've only been doing it as semi-pros. I left school and went right into it, and we were only sort of picking up a few quid a week, you know. It really wasn't work. I think the main thing is now that as we've got ourselves a bit of security, we don't really have to worry, at the moment anyway, what we're going to do after. So we don't.
None of you are really concerned with going on in this field as a profession.
Yeah, of course we are. I think all of us really, if it all suddenly flopped, then we would do something in this profession. But what we mean by Ringo and George's answers, what we mean that we don't really want to do, like the conventional answer is, I'd like to do ballads and films and straight acting, you know, which is so corny, because half the people who say that can't act or ballad or film, you know. So we probably wouldn't want to do that unless we thought we could do it. We're having a bash at Ville next year, and if we find that any of us can act, then possibly, when it finishes, say one out of us may become actors, but we haven't got any great hopes of being actors at the moment.
It said, John Lennon, that you have the most goon-type humour of the four Beatles.
Did you say that?
I think I read it in one of the newspaper reports.
Oh, you know what the newspapers are like.
No, what are they like?
Wrong.
I'm going wrong. I want to get a nice personality bit.
I haven't got a nice personality.
Is this evidence of goon-type humour?
No, I don't think I really have goon-type humour. That's just an expression people use.
What's the success you've enjoyed with the Beatles meant to you personally?
More money than I had before. That's the good bit.
Is it going to make any difference to your life, the way you live it after, say, this calms down, the enormous excitement you're generating at the moment?
I don't know, really.
Do you think a career as a comic might open up to you?
No. I don't stand a chance of being a comic.
Why not?
I'm not funny enough.
You were interested in poetry at school.
Who said?
It's printed in a book compiled by the Beatles and entitled The Beatles.
I haven't read that book. We don't normally write those things.
Written any good comic poems lately?
Yes, sir.
I just happen to have here by sheerest coincidence.
Dressed in my brown... Oh, no, I've lost it. Hold on. I can't read it here. I've only just written it. Well, that's how it starts, actually. Dressed in my teen old brown sweater, I easily micked with the crowd at Neville Club. A seamy hole. Soon, all but soon, people acoustic me saying such thing as, "We're the charge, man." I'm turning over. All too soon, I notice boys and girls sitting in a hobbled lump, smoking hernia and taking Odeon and getting very high. Some were only 4'3" high, but he had Indian hump, which he grew in his sleep. But things like that just help me keep sane.
Is this business enough to drive you insane?
No, I'm quite normal, really. If you read in the Beatle books, it says I'm quite normal.
The Beatles snatched their guitars, went on stage. I was left alone in the dressing room with only a few empty teacups to keep me company. The music might be country and western, but the Beatles are very, very British.
Dear public ear, we heard your programme on December the 29th when Tony Hall said it'd be nice if the people who liked our kind of music would also appreciate the kind of records and music that we play at home, like Murray Wells' Miracles, and not to mention Marvin Gaye. We believe that the fans would like these singers if they had the chance to hear them, you see, because we don't seem to hear enough of them these days on the radio. So you'd make us very happy, Tony, and you'd absolutely break us up if you'd play us some. Yours sincerely, George Harrison
and Ringo Starr. You wrecked me gag, you fool.
What was your gag?
You know, not to mention Marvin Gaye. And I say Marvin Gaye, and then you say, I told you not to mention him.
Thanks for your letter, George and Ringo.
Dear public ear, we heard your programme on December the 29th when Tony Hall said it'd be nice if the people who liked our kind of music would also appreciate the kind of records and music that we play at home, like Murray Wells' Miracles and not to mention Marvin Gaye.
Marvin Gaye?
I told you not to mention Marvin Gaye. We believe that the fans would like these singers if they had the chance to hear them, you see, because we don't seem to hear enough of them these days on the radio. So you'd make us very happy, Tony, and you'd absolutely break us up if you'd play us some. Yours sincerely, George Harrison.
And Ringo Starr.
A band.
This afternoon in our Paris studios, we're visiting with four young men. And if I just mention their first names, such as Paul and George and Ringo and John, I doubt if you'd know about whom we're speaking. But if I said we're here this afternoon with the Beatles, and if we were in England, I think we'd get a great big rousing hurrah, wouldn't we, boys? Well, let's see. We have, to my right here, we have Paul McCartney. Now, Paul, to tell us, how did the Beatles get going? How did you start?
That's a funny story, really. It was back, you know, it was back in the old days. We were all at school together, really, you know, we grew up at school, teenage buddies and things. But, you know, it developed from there, really.
Well, did you sing together around school?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, we were. George and I were at school together, and John was at the school next door, and Ringo was at Butlin's. And we, you know, we just started playing guitars and things. And it went on from there, really, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you say those were the olden days. Now, within the past year, you have mushroomed and tremendously, almost out of sight in such popularity. What was the click? What levered this great rage for the Beatles?
Well, it's funny, really, now you mention that. But I think it was the Palladium show, you know, the television show in England. And then following Hot in the Footsteps, and we had the Royal Variety Command Variety Performance. It's difficult to say that, actually. No, Royal Variety Command Performance for the Queen Mother, you know. Mm-hmm. And it all came up from there, really. The national newspapers got hold of it, and they got hold of Ringo, you know. And Mike Brown found about it, yeah. A lot of things, you know, a lot of columnists and things got onto the idea and started calling it Beatlemania.
Well, let's ask a question here with George Harrison. George, what is the status of rock and roll in England today? Is that what you call your music?
No, not really. We don't like to call it anything, but the critics and, you know, the people who write about it, you know, they have to call it something, so they didn't want to say it was rock and roll because rock's supposed to have gone out about 5 years ago, and so they decided it wasn't really rhythm and blues, so they decided to call it Liverpool, the Liverpool sound, which is, you know, it was stupid, really, because as far as we were concerned, it was just, you know, the same as the rock from 5 years ago.
Well, can you describe Liverpool sound, then?
Well, it's more like the old rock. It's just, you know, everything's a bit louder, more bass and bass drum, and everybody sort of sings loud and shouts and all that.
Well, is the Liverpool sound then the sound in UK today, in England?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's all the records now, everybody's sort of making records in that style.
Well, let's ask Ringo here. Now, you're the drummer. We caught your act at the Olympia the other evening. How long have you been beating those skins?
Oh, about 5 years now. I've been with the boys about 18 months now. I've been with other groups before that. Uh-huh. So that's 5 years.
Since you boys have gained your current popularity, have there been many other organizations trying to imitate you or perhaps take the thunder away from you? Let's ask John Lemon this.
I suppose a couple of people have jumped on the railway carriage. I mean, the bandwagon. But it doesn't really matter, you know, because it's flattery and it sort of promotes the whole idea
of us. If we're away and there's a few little Beatles still going, it'll remind people of us.
Well, Paul, let's go back to you for a moment. When anyone ever sees your pictures, the first thing that strikes them is naturally your hairdo. You've been referred to her don't. Yeah. Some people have written as though you were having the sheepdog cut, or perhaps an early Caesar. What do you call it, and how come you cut it that way?
Well, you know, Bob, to us it just sort of seems a natural thing, really, because it all arose this. We came out of the swimming baths one day, and you know, our hair sort of flops about after the swimming baths. Well, it stayed that way, you see, when nobody bothered to comb it. Mm-hmm. And it sort of stayed in the style, so we've never really called it anything. I don't know, until the papers got hold of it, and they called it the Beatles style, so you know, I suppose we go along with them now, really.
Do you go to the barber at all?
Well, you know, now and then, and do and don't.
Just to keep it trimmed?
Yeah, just to keep it trimmed, but sometimes we do it ourselves, you know. Yeah, the other thing is that it's really only our eyebrows that are growing upwards.
Yes, yeah. Well, we've been told that in England today there's this Beatlemania going on. Now, what do you describe? What would you say Beatlemania is? That all the girls scream whenever they see you and they perhaps faint waiting in line? Let's be immodest a moment. What is the attraction, huh?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's that dressing gown. George's dressing gown is definitely a big attraction. No, yeah, I don't think any of us really know what it is. We've been asked this question an awful lot of times, but we've never been able to come up with an answer yet, because I think it's a collection of so many different things, like happening to be there at the right time, at the right moment. It's the wrong place. No, but a little bit of originality in the songs, a little bit of a different sound. I don't know, it's an awful lot of things. Maybe the gimmick of the haircut as well, the luck, getting into the national press at the right time. It's an awful lot of luck.
All these things and more.
Well, you mentioned songs. Now, I understand you boys write your own material.
John and I write them. This is Paul speaking. John,
yes,
and I write.
Paul, yes. Well, how do you think of an idea? Do you get together regularly, or an idea pops in your mind, you say, let's sit down and do it?
If an idea does pop in your mind, then you do sit down and say, let's do it, yeah. But if there's no ideas, and say we've got to, we've been told we've got a recording date from about 2 days' time, then you have got to sit down and sort of slog it out. But you normally get, first of all, just a little idea, which doesn't seem bad. And you go on, and then it builds up from there. It varies every time, though, really, you know.
Well, Paul, we've seen you here at the Olympia. Can you compare the French audience with what you're familiar with back in England?
Well, there's a lot of difference, because in England, you see, the audience is 75% female. Here, 75% male. And that's the main difference, really, because they still appreciate it, but you don't get the full noise and the atmosphere of a place. No screams.
No screams and fainting. Why is it 75% boys?
I don't know, but I think they don't let the girls out at night in France. One of the reasons.
I think it's your dressing gown.
Somebody said that they still have to have chaperones, a lot of them, you see. Whereas in England, they're out. You know, they're
all watching.
And the boys, like. Yeah, and. It's funny, it's the same in Germany. All the boys, you know, like the rock, and it's usually the same on the continent. I don't really know why.
Okay. Well, Paul, we see the I Want to Hold Your Hand as number one on the hit parade, and we have a copy of it here right now. So let's sit back for a moment and listen to it. How did you come to write that, I Want to Hold Your Hand?
Let's see. We were told, this was one of the songs that we were told we definitely had to get down to it, we had to get working. So we went and we found, it was an old disused house that we found. We were just sort of walking along with it. We just thought, we've got to really get this song going. So we got down in the basement of this disused house, and there was an old sort of piano there. It wasn't really disused, you know, the house, sort of rooms to let.
We found this old piano, and we started banging away there. And we stayed there. And there was a little old organ there too. So we were just having this sort of informal jam session down there. And we started banging away. And suddenly, a little bit came to us. I think it was just sort of the catch line. And so we started working on it from there. And we got our pens and paper out. And we just wrote the lyrics down. And eventually, you know, we had some sort of a song. So we went back and we played it over to our recording manager. And he seemed to like it, yeah, so we recorded it the next day.
Do all your songs have a basic theme or story or message?
No.
Well, that's a
quick answer. they don't, but there's one thing that nearly always seems to run through our songs. People always point it out to us. That's the I and you and me is always seems to be in the title, you know. I want to hold your hand, she loves you, and love me do, and things like this. Well, I think the reason for that really is that we nearly always try and write songs which are a little bit more personal than others, you see. So by having these prepositions, whatever you call them, I and me and you, in the titles, makes the songs a little bit more personal. But I think that's the only sort of basic message that does run through our songs.
And you coined this, yeah, yeah, yeah. Isn't that really sweeping England right now, the phrasing, yeah, 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 on all the songs?
Yeah, well, that was the sort of main catchphrase from She Loves You. But we stuck that on, we'd written the song nearly, and then we suddenly needed more, so we had yeah, yeah, yeah. And it caught on, you know, they used it for, you know, if you're going to be with it or hip.
It's sort of a trademark for your boys now.
Yeah, we'll have to write another song with it.
Well, Paul, what do you think of your trip to the States? I understand in about a week or 10 days you're going to be on the Ed Sullivan Show. Could you tell us about it?
Yeah, that's right. We're going to do Ed Sullivan Show in New York, and we're taping one for later release sort of thing. And we're looking forward to those. Then we go down to Florida, Miami, can't wait, and we do another Ed Sullivan there. But I think before that we do a Carnegie Hall, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're playing on Carnegie Hall.
How were you selected for Ed Sullivan? Was he in England, caught your act or something?
Well, when we were flying back, this is the story we heard. We were arriving from Stockholm into London Airport, and at the same time the Prime Minister and the Queen Mother were also flying out, but the airport was just overrun with teenagers. You know, there were thousands of them waiting for us to get back, and Ed Sullivan was supposed to have arrived at that time and wondered what was going on. And you know, he found out it was us arriving, and also our manager went over to the States with another singer called Billy J. Kramer, and he did a couple of TV shows over there, and while he was over there, our manager got the bookings with Ed Sullivan. But he'd also heard of us from this London Airport thing, and that's about it.
And how about a movie? Is there a movie in the future?
We've been asked by United Artists to do a feature movie.
Would it be dramatic or just strictly wrapped around your singing?
No, we don't know yet, really, what it's going to be like. I don't think we'll have to do an awful lot of acting. I think it'll be written around the sort of people that we are, and there'll be four characters in it, very like us.
Well, do you plan to compose two or three songs specifically for the film?
Well, actually, we've got to compose six songs specifically for the film. We've got to get down to that, too. That's a job.
Then you boys really haven't had much of a chance to see Paris, have you?
No, not really.
Not really, no.
What do you think of it so far?
Well, it's nice, quite nice, you know.
How about the French girls compared to the British girls?
Oh, we haven't seen any yet.
John?
Yeah, well, I'm married. I didn't notice them.
Oh, we'll go back to Paul then.
Yeah, I think they're great.
Oh, you're single.
Yeah, I think the French girls are fabulous. Yeah.
But we have seen more French boys than French girls. So, I mean, you know, we can't really tell.
Well, perhaps when you get to the Ed Sullivan Show, there'll be more girls for you.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Any of you been to America before?
Yeah, me. I went in September for a holiday for 3 weeks.
Just George Harrison. Well, I see our time is up, boys, and thank you very much, Beatles, for being our guest on AFN this afternoon on Weekend World. So it's on the line. Back to you, Jim, from Paris.